Welcome to the Panic Pod podcast with Ella Jean and myself, Joshua Fletcher. This is episode 16 and it's entitled The Chronic Symptoms of Anxiety. How are you doing, Ella?
I'm doing quite well. Yeah, doing all right. How have you been?
I've been doing all right. We were discussing before we started recording all these multiple projects and things that we're doing, and kind of we have to rein it in sometimes because, like, I've noticed my stress levels getting like really high, and yeah. And I realized, hold on, whoa, I need to take some time out for myself.
Yeah, so, I think it says something about where my stress levels usually are that I had a moment yesterday where I noticed that I wasn't clenching my jaw, which is like something that I'm almost always doing when I'm just like sat working or focusing. And then finally I was having this really relaxing conversation. I was like, I'm not tensing right now. This is great. This is wow. Like, just naturally I feel so relaxed. It was just awesome.
Wow, I'm jealous. Yeah. I'm currently hating you right now. I wish I had that. No, it's really good that you, that's it. I am a jaw clencher too.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a bit of a weird one because, like, how do you unthink to do that habit? What sort of, like, things have you learned over the years to try to... I just heard of mindfulness. That's all anyone's ever told me about. Like, just try to notice when you're doing it.
I don't even like that. I just... First of all, when you're clenching, that is a symptom of stress.
Mm-hmm.
So... You're preventative, you know, you're stressed for a reason, so you find the source of that stress. You know, my friend actually, he's also called Josh, he once sent to me on holiday about the jaw tension. He goes, and he just laughed, he's like, because he gets it as well, do you know the worst thing you can do about it is think about it, is focus on it. And actually, yeah, if you think about mindfulness, it's like, I'm noticing that my jaw is tense. When actually guiding your attention away from it whatsoever and learning to de-stress is probably the best thing you can do, because it's a paradox. You suddenly then realize, oh, my jaw isn't hurting. You know, there's no one single moment where your jaw stops hurting. It's like,
for sure. Oh,
yeah, you just forget it.
Yeah, like any kind of habit that people have, it's like it will resurface. And but yeah, that's interesting because I've never really thought about thinking about where the particular stress is coming from in that moment. And sometimes that leads you to think this is just chronic, which I guess leads us to what we're talking about today. Like, it's interesting to think about those times when I'm clenching and then I do try to think about, like, well, why is this? And it's like, it's just 'cause right now there isn't anything that's really stressing me out. Like, it just is. And then you suddenly realize, oh, I don't really need to be like carrying all of this. And then when that happens once, you realize, wait, what about all those other times that I was stressed and anxious? Were all of them valid? Were all of them like needed or necessary? Like, yeah.
I think what's really to highlight chronic symptoms of anxiety is these are symptoms caused by feeling anxious. I've had a few people ask me, well, actually, no, scratch that, ask us about kind of, can we talk about certain symptoms of anxiety? So some of the chronic symptoms of anxiety are things like headaches, palpitations, feeling on edge, and a big one as well that isn't spoken around a lot is derealization. Derealization or dissociation or whatever you want to, you know, want to call it. Depersonalization. It's basically that symptom that you get when you don't quite feel here, there's a sense of unreality. You feel like you're looking into a dream world, you can hear yourself speak, you're looking from behind your own eyes. All kind of scary. It sounds quite scary, and it is for some people, but it's really normal and loads of people have it. So right. If you feel a bit spaced out and not you, that's fine. But that's a chronic symptom of anxiety as well, because sometimes it can stay there for a long time, as well as headaches, heart palpitations, IBS, things like that. And
yeah, I've heard derealization spoken about a few times, but yeah, I kind of want to just like understand that more because, yeah, like you said, those symptoms, it must be a spectrum, right? And so would something like when you're having a hard time focusing, is that somewhere on the spectrum towards derealization? Like where you just, you have this little bit of the inner narrative stuff, little bit of the, you're kind of lost in your own thoughts, like really just kind of stuck in your mind as opposed to like focusing on doing something? Like, is that kind of considered on the spectrum of derealization, or like
derealization? In theory, it can affect your concentration on its own. Mm. But when we start to worry about it, it's that very worry of derealization that makes us suddenly not be able to concentrate, because we're afraid, some of us are afraid of what it means.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you've got derealization, all it means is that you've got a heightened blood oxygen level from hyperventilating, but also it's part of your fight or flight response. And when your fight or flight response is going off, more blood flow is directed from your brain into your muscles and body. So therefore, you've got kind of less blood flow happening around the brain. And as a result, you just get this weird sense of detachment and unreality. Mm. Millions of people get it. So if you're hearing it, if you're listening at home, you're like, oh my God, that sounds like me. You're not alone, and that's okay. And that's derealization. However, it affects people from their interpretation of it. So when people misinterpret it as something dangerous, they can't stop focusing on it. It becomes an obsession.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone who contacted me prior to the show to discuss it, and it's an obsession for them.
Mm.
And it's like, what happens is when we go back to the amygdala, we're scared of the derealization. The amygdala registers that. It triggers a fear response. We're then further scared of it, and we can't end up concentrating. Like you said, we can't concentrate on the tasks that we wanted to do,
mm-hmm.
because we're obsessed with the derealization. The same applies to heart palpitations.
Mm-hmm.
I had this, actually, this is a personal story. I was worried about heart palpitations, so I used to just focus on my chest and heart and just wait for the next palpitation.
Wow, yeah.
Which, and it's something that you mentioned before we started recording, you start then developing self-perpetuating symptoms.
Right.
So if you worry about heart palpitations and you focus on it, you're creating more worry, which creates more palpitations, which is fine. It's not hurting you. Same with headaches. I've got a headache. Mm-hmm. I'm worried about a headache. That adds more stress, mm-hmm. more tension. Posture goes, and the headache gets worse. Derealization. Mm-hmm. You know, I have derealization. I'm scared about it. My amygdala thinks it's danger. It releases more chemicals. I breathe in a stress way, and less blood comes from the brain, is floating around the brain because it's going to the body, so it maintains it. These are examples of self-perpetuating symptoms, and there's loads of them as well. Mm. There's absolutely loads of them.
Mm-hmm. Right, and so is that, when we talk about self-perpetuating symptoms, that does that sort of then lead into what can be considered chronic anxiety, because you are doing something when you feel the onset of the symptoms that's worsening them and kind of getting your body into a routine of how to handle those anxiety responses? Sort of, is it like chronic essentially when things become normal, when like the anxious response becomes like such a part of your day-to-day life that
chronic anxiety, chronic symptoms, bang on. If you think about it, there's a lot of health anxiety at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time of this episode, we're still in lockdown, pandemic, COVID-19, mm-hmm. etc. And the self-perpetuating symptoms just surrounding that.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, anxiety naturally makes you feel out of breath.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes you can't catch your breath because of hyperventilation. Now, people who don't understand that, mm-hmm. suddenly they'll find it difficult to catch their breath,
mm-hmm.
and they'll be like, oh my God, I can't catch my breath. Worried voice.
Yeah.
What if I've got coronavirus? Mm-hmm. And then in previous episodes, Ella and I talk about worried voice, false comfort. And then false comfort says, well, direct all your attention to checking that that's not the case, because that would be horrendous.
Mm-hmm.
And then so a day that would have been spent doing stuff for us, our job, planning something fun, it's spent in our heads just focusing on how we feel.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a shame.
I was also talking to a friend about sort of like health anxiety during coronavirus, and talking about avoidance in that cycle as well, because I think when we think of like worried voice, false comfort, we can think about Googling things, going down a hole, trying to like self-diagnose what you're doing, where you're expressing a lot of concern for it. And that's one way that that false comfort can manifest. But what about false comfort when it actually just makes you avoid it completely? And I'm just thinking about how this might perpetuate other symptoms of anxiety. Like if you aren't acknowledging your anxiety, if you're not even sort of taking a moment to believe that it's afflicting you and that it's happening, we can just start to avoid it. And that's when chronic anxiety can become a real, real problem, because not only are you anxious chronically, but you're not admitting it. You're not admitting it to yourself. You're not admitting it to people around you. And then it just stays, because this false comfort is going and just being like, just get back to work. Don't be silly. What are you doing? And you just end up in a state of anxiety there. I'm wondering, like, what, when it comes to chronic anxiety, and particularly when your false comfort is like denying that you even have anxiety, have you like talked to clients or spoken to people who have such denial about their anxiety that they're not even able to like get out of that cycle?
I've met a lot of people who have denied being anxious. Yes,
right.
Probably
not clients, because they wouldn't be ready to come to you yet.
Clients, no, because they're ready to kind of talk about it and acknowledge it. But I have, well, as a psychotherapist, who I've worked in organisations where people have perhaps been unaware it's anxiety and have kind of brought their attention to it. But in general, by the time people come to me, it's because they're aware that they're anxious already and they want to do something about it. I've definitely seen a lot of people in denial, particularly in my personal life. I've seen the symptoms of anxiety and avoidance and false comforts in people that they don't recognize it. And that chronic kind of anxiety in itself. So let's say one of the symptoms is chronic unease. The most common sign of denial is when I see people who chronically, compulsively clean. They clean, organize, have to keep themselves busy, have endless to-do lists, because actually they have a chronic symptom of anxiety, which is feeling nervous, being on edge. Mm-hmm. And so to compensate for that, they, you know, they need to feel productive, they need to feel efficient, they need to do 1,000 things. You know, they need to clean a microwave that doesn't need cleaning. They need to iron underwear.
I can totally think of, I'm thinking of some people in my life, and this kind of takes it even one step further, because I'm curious about like what you would do. What you would do in this situation, because I'm sure there's people out there listening who, it's really tough when you are experiencing anxiety, you're open about it, you're at least aware of it, you started on your journey to helping yourself, and you can see it in people that you love, and you can see it in your friends and your family, and you want to find a way to like crack open that conversation. So I'm wondering, I've met a lot of people who will have those symptoms and just say stuff like, oh, I'm just such a busy bee, you know, I'm just always moving around, I'm just always doing something, like, I just got to keep myself busy. Oh no, I have to have the TV on while I write, because
keep,
I just need to keep
carry
my,
on.
Yeah, I got to keep my mind busy,
hate,
you know?
That slogan, by the way. Hate is a strong word, and I stand by every part of it.
Ooh, how the tables have turned, because the last time that we were sort of talking about this, to me, keep calm, carry on is a very like generational saying. And you reminded me last time we were talking about this that, you know, it was a different time that people had to use that to carry on, to literally, like, do what they were doing.
Yeah, well,
yes,
life. I'm a hypocrite. Well done.
Well.
Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I felt right the first time, so now I get to be right.
Yes, generationally it was applicable to a time, yes. But now
it's
dismissive of emotional distress.
Absolutely. It's very dismissive now, and just not necessary when we have the ability to have conversations and have the language to talk about this. So say that I'm living with someone who describes themselves as like a busy bee, or like, I just always have to keep moving. Like, how do you even begin to have that conversation to like say, hey, have you thought about what this is doing for your health? Or like, have you thought about, if it's coming from a place of love that you're like, you're wanting to bring up the conversation about anxiety. This is tough, but I think that there's a lot of people out there as well that are like, they have this person in their life and they're not quite sure how to bring it up in a compassionate way. that doesn't come across as like, I think you have anxiety?
It's difficult because people don't like to receive diagnostic language going towards them.
Absolutely.
You know, and particularly in an age where there's lots of insulting and inconsiderate things, like I hear just very freely people like, oh, he's a bit autistic, he's on spectrum.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or mm-hmm. oh, I'm OCD.
Or OCD.
Like,
yeah,
you don't know what OCD. Oh, I'm bipolar. Mm-hmm. No, you're not. Like, you'd know if you had bipolar, you know, trust mm-hmm. me, you know it. And anyone who knows someone who has bipolar will know, you know, mm-hmm. and these things are thrown away. Telling someone, you know, noticing that you feel that someone needs help, it's difficult because it's very, people feel very defensive if you think you know more about them than they do, and mm-hmm. naturally.
People have to feel ready to make that choice themselves. They have to feel ready to like go to a therapist if needed.
There's that old therapy joke, and if there's any therapists listening, you know, it's been done to death. But like, how many psychotherapists does it take to change a light bulb? None. The light bulb has to want to change itself.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the kind. But that actually applies.
Yeah, right.
Like, you've got to want to change. You've got to acknowledge your problem.
That's actually really good advice, I think, that if people are struggling with, like, trying to bring that attention to someone, then, like, you can only do so much, you know?
You model behavior. I tell people I've been to therapy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still am in therapy. I still see my therapist.
Mm-hmm.
He's called Tony, and I see him every Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
I
was talking to you about a coaching session I had yesterday where I bawled my eyes out, which has basically been like therapy lately. So it's just good to be open about it.
And is it good? Are you finding it enjoyable?
Oh man, like absolutely. And I just you don't know what you're preserving until after. And then you're like, what was all of that guarding? Like, what was I trying to keep up? What was I trying to like hold together throughout that whole period before I went to a therapist? You just like. It unveils itself and you're like, that was just silly.
But even you saying that, and I really enjoy my therapy, I'm not telling anyone to get to therapy,
mm-hmm.
but if I'm in earshot of a family member or someone I know who's in therapy, that can be enough. It's called mm-hmm. modeling. You model it. So when I walk in full of beans and I'm like, yeah, I'm so happy and gleeful, which is never, you know me, but like when I walk in and show that I'm doing well,
mm-hmm.
People see that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, therefore, it may empower them to want to change themselves.
Right.
But as soon as you burst in and say, listen, you know, Uncle Simon, you're a nut job. You need help.
People are just going to run for the hills.
He's going to just say no. And rightly so. I would as well. If someone said, you need help, I'm not going to get help. If I saw a mate saying, oh, you know, I've been feeling down recently. I've been really anxious. Can't stop. I'm really still, but I saw a therapist and we discussed this and it was really great. I feel great. Mm. I'm more likely going to kind of go, ooh, okay.
Right.
No. Or linking back, I've been really having these chronic symptoms. I've been having chest pain. I bet how many people listening here have chest pain. I've been having loads of chest pain, stomach pain, IBS. My fibromyalgia has been flaring up. I've been having muscle twitch. There's another one I get a lot of emails for. Muscle twitching.
Mm-hmm.
These are self-perpetuating symptoms as well. If you're worried about muscle twitching and then you keep worrying and focusing on your muscle twitching, guess what? Your muscles are going to keep twitching.
Yeah.
Which then people misinterpret as, oh no, I've got motor neuron disease. Mm-hmm. I've got MS and stuff. And you've got to get out of that cycle, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as someone whose father died from motor neuron disease, I'm living proof that you can get out of that cycle because mm-hmm. I've seen it kind of firsthand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but at the same time, if there's anyone listening who has motor neuron disease, the suffering, aside from the pain, is actually the anxiety and the fear surrounding what's going through.
Right. Yeah. Which you. It gets quite existential when you're thinking about that. Like, have you been watching any of the fantastic new cartoon Midnight Gospel, Josh? I must bring this up because it's just been such a part of my life. And we're doing a podcast.
Are we going to have this argument now right on air?
I can't
stand that show.
Okay, well.
I'm an old man now.
This shows our age difference. No.
Look at me. I smoke weed.
so,
Sorry.
I felt like, yeah, like, if, yeah, that, as someone who quit that right before watching it, I was very happy to say that it's, like, it's one of those things that makes you, I think all of their work is sort of meant to make you feel like you're on this crazy spiritual journey while you're just sitting on your sofa, can be absolutely sober, and listening to people talk about existentialism and meditation and stuff, and just the part that, you know, you don't need this show to talk about this, but a woman who was diagnosed with terminal cancer being able to talk about how that was actually one of the most liberating moments in her life, being told that you have this oncoming end date, and she completely changed what priorities were there in her life. You know, it's tragic, but when you think about how much of suffering is
the unknown,
anxiety and the unknown, and like thinking about what's about to happen. You've told me, I think in our health anxiety episode, you said that, you know, you knew someone who's on death's door, and he's like one of the most calm, centered people that you know, because you're able to like focus on the reality of it. It's all this fear of the unknown and what might happen that actually brings you so much struggle.
You don't know how you, this is the thing, like, you don't know how you'll react when things happen. You can only imagine it through the lens of anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
People with chronic anxiety always fear that they can't cope in a situation or if this certain situation occurs, but you'll surprise yourself. And the key word here is habituation.
Mm-hmm.
You can habituate to any scenario. It's really interesting you say that as well. I remember one of the most inspirational people in my life was my little brother.
Mm.
And at 14 years old, he got terminal cancer.
Mm.
And actually, he was a bit of a worrier himself. And actually, he never really worried about it.
Mm.
And if he did, and he shared everything with me. And he never really worried about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that always blew my mind, because I'm an anxious wreck sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, if I look back on all the times in my life where I've really shocking things have happened, I've dealt with them okay. And that would, I bet you my bottom dollar, any people listening at home, you can relate to that. There'll be times in your life where you've gone, oh, yeah, actually, I dealt with that okay.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's breakups, mm-hmm. moving house, giving birth, grief,
mm-hmm.
illness,
mm-hmm.
that kind of thing. You don't know how you react to it actually happens.
I had a coaching session this week, and like I say, it's a lot like therapy. And one of the things that was just so brought me so much energy in it was taking a moment to think about those times when I had done something that was really hard. Like you say, all of those things, like when you're giving birth, when you're moving to a new city, when you're starting a new job and the first 2 weeks are super overwhelming and you just feel like completely out of your depth, like, and how adaptable we are. I was doing some more reflection like after the session and wrote in my journal, you can choose to define yourself by all the times when you've avoided things or all the times you felt like you were lazy, or you can choose to define yourself by all these times where you didn't look away when it got hard. And I think,
ooh, I like
personally
that.
I've like really not spent enough time ruminating on the times where I didn't look away when it got hard, when I actually did the thing that was scary. And instead I tell myself the story all the time that I'm lazy, you know, I haven't done as much as other people. And to just take a moment and realize that, like, no, there, when I count them, there's been a lot of them. And it's not like I'm being selfish or indulgent by like taking the time to reflect on something that I've already done. You know what I mean? Like,
nope,
of course I get to
critic.
Enjoy that. Like, yeah. I get to enjoy thinking about the accomplishments that I've had. That's not really selfish to do. It's just like, you can reframe all of those moments. And even just talking about anxiety, period, like, people are on these like wild journeys with their anxiety, and people can probably relate to, like, even just acknowledging that it exists is a huge thing to be proud of, because you're facing it and you're realizing, I'm not gonna look away, I'm gonna handle this problem, I'm gonna look at all of the fear that lies behind it, because I want to overcome it and I want to deal with it. And like, that's a huge step even within itself.
Agreed. Yeah, I think that's, I'm so glad you're getting a lot out of that as well. And even that, just when we're talking about modeling, you've modeled something, you know, nice for someone there. I'm like, oh, wow, someone's developing through taking time out for themselves and reflecting on themselves. Maybe I should do that. Very good. Okay, let's play, put you on the spot again.
Great.
Chronic anxiety symptoms. Hello, Dr. Ella, unqualified, unlicensed psychotherapist. I've been having derealization, and I can't stop thinking about it. What can I do?
Well, derealization is a very common symptom, and...
Oh, really? I thought I was alone with it. Thank you.
And it's to do with the oxygen levels that come in through your lungs and will affect your brain. And so there is actually a lot physiologically that can be tied to derealization. So when you're experiencing it, probably the most important thing to remember is to not let yourself get too focused on it. Try to do something that brings your body back to a homeostasis, which is just be normal, just relax, just do something that brings you back to a steady place. My good friend Josh recommended once, maybe that's time to pull out a game on your phone for a minute. Maybe that's time to sit down on the couch for a bit, go make a cup of tea, do something that's not thinking about where you are in the moment of derealization, and just try to do something a bit more normal for a minute.
That's interesting, because I keep concentrating on my derealization. I can't stop focusing on it. So you're saying it's okay to kind of guide my focus away? It's not going to get worse?
Absolutely. By focusing on it, you're just going to stay in the same place, and it's going to get stronger, and it's going to be made worse.
Yeah.
Nothing's going to happen. You'll just continue to stay in the same state of derealization. You're going to be fine, but... it will just stay there the more that you dwell on it.
Yeah, it just stays there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Feels more tense now and then, but yeah, it just stays there. Mm-hmm. And you've just answered basically the same thing with any kind of symptom of anxiety. Obviously, if people at home have got really chronic pain, go chat to your doctor and you know, get some relief and have a proper conversation around that. Mm-hmm. But in general, Ella's summary of how you treat derealization is how you treat most of it. So palpitations, headaches, the kind of thing. Obviously, if you've got something chronic, run it by your doctor just in case. But in when you know it's a recurring symptom and you know it's just solely linked to anxiety, they're the ones that you sit there and go, right, okay, what am I doing that's perpetuating this?
You know?
And simply referring to my first book, it's just like, and it's a slogan that's just stayed with me all my life. It's just anxiety. Like, it's just anxiety. It's just anxiety.
Yeah,
whatever. It's just anxiety.
And yeah, it can't hurt you. Like, it can stay and can be really inconvenient, and it can be there for a long time. But anxiety itself, it can't, it's not going to do anything to you. The fear is what's actually hurting you.
Yeah, the fear of the unknown stuff. Yeah, that's it. I think it's good. I hope the people that requested that, you know who you are. I'm not going to say their names. I hope the people that requested that, that's answered a few things for you there. And well answered, Ella. That was tough.
Whew, I can take off my unqualified therapist hat now. Okay, good.
You are now better than 60% of therapists I know. And you're not even qualified. Oops. Yeah. Brilliant. And I think next time we said we were going to discuss getting angry at anxiety, getting upset about anxiety, resenting it, getting frustrated at anxiety itself. So we'll do that next time, which I look forward to doing. But for now, Yeah, is there any kind of final thoughts you've got, Ella?
No, just to say, if anybody has any follow-up, any other questions regarding chronic symptoms of anxiety, feel free to get in touch with us at talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. talk@thepanicroom.co.uk. You can submit anonymously. You can leave your name if you'd like to be recognized there. It's totally up to you. We're on Instagram at thepanicpod. Right?
Yes, we got over 6,000 followers now.
Oh my goodness. Oh, wowzer. That's really cool. And yeah, whatever podcast platform you're listening on, and if you've been enjoying the show, we'd love if you could leave us a review. It would help other people find us. That would be much appreciated. That's all I can think of.
Well, that's great. I didn't think about that. Yeah, no, that's good. I like that. Also, if you want to hear a bit more, I got a radio show on Wellbeing Radio every Thursday at 6 o'clock. It's called Notes on Anxiety, where I talk a bit about anxiety, but then I play some music for some of the best unsigned musicians around. You can get it on demand and catch up and stuff like that as well. It's just me messing around, and it's an excuse to listen to music. Okay, well, thank you very much, Ella. I can't wait to record the next one. But I'm glad that things are going well with the coach and things like that. And yeah, I'll catch you next time.
Catch you next time. Bye, Josh.
Bye-bye.